This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, where we talk about the biggest stories from across Texas. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, and today we're going to be talking about some of the big stories from this week. I'm joined right now with Jacob Asmussen, a senior reporter here at Texas Scorecard, to talk about a few stories. And I think the first of which, though, is in Austin, Texas's capital city. Once again, we see just an absolutely stunning result in an election where this time a Proposition A, that was sort of a anti-defund the police proposition, restoring funding to the police departments, failed pretty heavily.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, you can read about it at texasscorecard.com. Long story short, last year, Democrat-run Austin City Council defunded the Austin Police Department by one-third. Mm-hmm. That sparked a year-long disaster of violent crime, record homicides, a disaster at the department. Fast forward to now, you had citizens organized to get a petition on the ballot to say, hey, we want to restore the police. We want to restore staffing officers to the department. That vote was on Tuesday this week. It overwhelmingly failed 68% to 32%.
Yeah, I'm looking at it, 68 to 32%. I mean, less than 22%, keep in mind, of eligible voters participated. And this was despite, I mean, you actually had a pretty high-profile person coming out and warning earlier in the week that, you know, Austin might be going down kind of a bad road.
Absolutely. You had even Elon Musk, the Tesla CEO, billionaire, SpaceX entrepreneur. He came out and even chimed in on the debate. He said, look, Austin should be its own city. It shouldn't turn into San Francisco. It shouldn't even be a San Francisco copycat, mm-hmm. is what he said. And so, you know, shocking result here in the capital city.
I mean, just running down some of these numbers, we've got by September, Austin already had more killings so far this year than in city history, with nearly 80 homicides. That's versus 48 from last year. And, you know, this what did this campaign look like? Because it's hard to imagine. Look, we just had, not too long ago, Austin voters coming out and voting to reinstate a homeless camping ban, which was a win for, I guess you'd call it kind of the conservative faction in the city, such as it is, right? And yet we saw such a flip here. I mean, what did this campaign look like?
Yeah, so the main leader of the campaign is a group, citizen group called Save Austin Now. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, they already had a success earlier this year with the public camping disaster. That was a separate story. But they got together a coalition of people across the city, Democrats and Republicans, to come and override one of the city council's harmful decisions, right? Mm-hmm. So they had that just a few months ago in May. And now with the police petition effort, you know, they had gathered a petition of 25,000 plus signatures, you know, so they had support, and yet, you know, only a fraction of the city's whole population turned out to vote on Tuesday, and we see that it went down. Now, notably, though, however, you had Save Austin Now on the pro-police side, but on the other side was a faction funded by New York billionaire George Soros. Mm-hmm. And actually, this coalition, all of their money came from out of state, whereas 98% of Save Austin Now's money came from within Texas,
right.
within Austin, right? And so you had the out-of-state coalition mm-hmm. coming in, posting misleading signs throughout the city, right? Really trying to smear the police effort, mm-hmm. and ultimately it was successful.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some of those ads talking about if you vote for Prop A, right, we're going to have to cut down parks, we're going to have to, you know, tear down the library, right?
Yeah.
Houses are going to be set on fire, there's not going to be any firefighters. Kind of the usual hyperbole we usually see in some of these campaigns, and so it looks like they're going to try again.
Yeah, yeah. The Save Austin Now co-founder Matt Makoviec said this week he's looking at another ballot effort in May, as well as multiple city council seats next year that are up for election to hopefully get some new people into the council so they can start shifting the city and to stop enacting some of these harmful policies.
Right. Well, speaking of firefighters, you know, a lot of parents have been burning up as they've discovered that pornographic materials have been found in their students' libraries. This revelation coming out last week. We talked about it a little bit on the program last week, but give people a little bit of a background of this story.
Yeah, so this is happening across the state, but we wrote about one specific district recently, Keller ISD, North Texas, Fort Worth area. Parents there discovered a graphic novel aimed at young adults called Gender Queer that depicts graphic sex acts, you know, in full color illustrations in this book. And so parents discovered this, right? They brought it to the attention, exposed that whole situation. That sparked parents across the state looking into their school libraries saying, hey, you know, do we have pornographic material available to our elementary and middle school age kids in our libraries? Parents started discovering it across the state, right? And now you had Governor Greg Abbott recently respond by sending a letter to the Texas Association of School Boards, just asking them to do something about it.
Yeah, very, very interesting, because you look at the timeline. This stuff is revealed last week. You have, at that time, you have State Representative Jeff Kasin asking Attorney General Ken Paxton to open an investigation into schools and telling them to look into actually disciplining some of these schools that are providing this pornographic material. But then you follow that up. As you said, on Monday, the governor sends a letter, interestingly, to the Texas Association of School Boards, TASB, which is not a governmental entity, right? It's an organization that school boards, a lot of school boards, most school boards in Texas, are members of. But it's not actually a governmental entity. In fact, they responded just a couple days later saying, you know, why don't you try to bring this directive to the Texas Education Agency or perhaps the State Board of Education, some actually governmental board. And so far we haven't really seen any continued action on this.
Yeah, and State Rep Jeff Kasin, like you said, he also responded to that. He said, look, Abbott, I don't think your letter is going to accomplish much, but it does look good on Twitter, he said. And so, you know, we'll see what the governor does if he actually takes any action to stop this pornographic material.
Getting just parents all over the state saying that they're finding this in their schools, and it's, you know, it's really an issue that's burning up. And meanwhile, it's interesting to see that this one that the left is ignoring, really.
Yeah, well, and especially in light of you know, tragic, horrific events across the country, like in Loudoun County, Virginia, right?
Yeah.
You know, the environment in public schools, the curriculum in the classrooms, right? The critical race theory, right? Teaching racist ideologies, providing pornographic materials to kids. You know, what's happening in the public schools is horrific, and thankfully parents across the state, across the nation, are rising up, are speaking out, but yet we're seeing in Texas not a lot being done yet by our officials, you know, by the governor, by the state representatives. And so we'll see what happens there.
Absolutely. I know you're following a lot of these stories, and we'll be taking a look at them as we continue over the next few weeks. Thanks for joining, Jacob.
Absolutely.
Now, before we get into our next segment, we're going to talk about some of the retirements right now. We've got 20 retirements in the Texas legislature. But we've also got the potential that there could be a shakeup statewide, okay? You've got now three declared essentially gubernatorial challengers to Greg Abbott, incumbent Governor Greg Abbott. In case you missed it, a few weeks back, Texas Scorecard sat down with some of them, with three of those challengers. We invited the governor as well. Check out this preview. As I mentioned, we're going to be talking about the retirements, okay? We're now up to 20 so far in the Texas House and the Texas Senate combined. Some of those people aren't just leaving altogether. Some of them are actually seeking new offices. Here to talk about it right now, Capitol correspondent Jeremy Kitchen. Jeremy, I know you've been tracking this, and it's even changed as of yesterday. We added a couple more to the list. And so I just wanted to run down as I kind of pull up the list as well here,
sure,
run through some of these. But first, what's the top line here?
Top line is, to your point, there's 20. There's 16 in the House of Representatives of folks that have either announced they're not seeking re-election at all or not seeking re-election to their current position and moving on. And then there's 4 in the Senate. That's generally on par with kind of the last few legislative sessions. Interestingly, it's kind of early for us to reach this number, so who knows, there might be more. I think the big takeaway, at least on the House side, is I've gotten multiple reports from different lawmakers that Speaker Phelan was handed a list of 20 names at the beginning of the most recently concluded special session, and so who knows, there might still be more
right.
to announce here. Yeah.
And why are, again, before we dive into these individuals and run through the list, what are the reasons for leaving the legislature?
I think there's a few, right? Like I think it's hard to ignore that there's probably some, maybe not publicly, but some disgruntled lawmakers who, for lack of a better term, haven't been given much of a role within kind of the leadership structure, especially in the House, right? They were kind of on the outs because maybe they supported the wrong speaker candidate back in November, that sort of thing. You've also got lawmakers that have been there generally for a long time, as well as we saw with Senator Lucio, right, yesterday. And I think, they kind of leave you in politics. First of all, you try to leave on a high, right? And so if you've had a successful legislative session, you don't necessarily want to risk that later. And I think third, the other part of that is I've heard for a long time, right, that there were several lawmakers that were trying to leave last legislative session that were Republicans. They were convinced for whatever reason to stay on. Again, this is back, especially in the House, when Republicans thought, hey, we need to keep our majority. Could you stay at least one more legislative session? Let's try to make that happen. And so I think you saw a lot of those that were trying to do that going into a redistricting year, realizing that, okay, I'll stay on, for one more cycle. It's kind of a mixture of all of those things.
Right. And just to say, a lot of these will go through, had some serious grassroots pressure on them and really on them to retire. Actually, we'll start right away here from House District 9, Chris Patty, state representative, who's currently the chair of House State Affairs, and actually found himself facing some pressure from activists back at home.
That's right. He there was a censorship resolution that got passed by his home county, right?
Yeah.
There, he's from Marshall, Texas, but got passed and sent up to the overall state Republican Executive Committee. So there was that on top of just increased pressure. And they were alleging that he did not support key legislative priorities of his own party, right? Mm-hmm. Taxpayer-funded lobbying,
right.
A good example.
Yeah, well, not only an issue where he didn't support it, but was actually instrumental in killing it.
Sure, absolutely. And you saw that with the SB 10, as it was in the regular session, that dealt with kind of the banning the practice of taxpayer-funded lobbying on the local level, so.
All right, going through these in numerical order by district number. House District 13, Ben Lamont announced he wasn't running for re-election a while back. Kind of an interesting one. I think he's only been there for 2 sessions, right?
That's right. He's a fairly young lawmaker, for
Says
sure.
He wants to spend more time with family. James White in House District 19. Okay, now this is somebody who is leaving because they are running for a different office.
That's right. Back in June, he announced that he was challenging Sid Miller for Texas Agriculture Commissioner. Notably, they had special sessions, so there wasn't much campaigning going on necessarily there. He's also a recent entrant into the Texas Freedom Caucus, one of their more recent members as well. So, yep, he's leaving he represents House District 19, which, of course, as you know, right, was one of the kind of sacrificial districts in the redistricting process that's now going to be located West Travis County, West Austin area.
Right. So. Going to our next one here, House District 38, Eddie Lucio III. This is not the father, although we'll be talking about him in a bit. The son of Senator Eddie Lucio Jr., a Democrat from the Valley, announced he wouldn't be running for re-election.
That's right. This was a few weeks ago. He's a long-term, even though he's young, is a long-term House lawmaker from down the Valley area, Brownsville, Harlingen area. I guess the chairman of the House, or was at one point, the House Insurance Committee as well. Certainly kind of been within the confines of leadership, if you will, in the House for a while. He announced a few weeks ago he wouldn't be coming back.
Celia Israel, House District 50. right here in Austin, announced she's leaving because she's running for mayor of Austin.
She's exploring a potential run for mayor of Austin, which pretty much means that you're running for Austin. But yeah. No, she can't technically file for that until next summer. She's that seat creates an open seat, if you will. In fact, we saw, I think it was a Pflugerville city councilman announced, and then we saw James Tallarico, right, mm-hmm. a state representative from the Round Rock area, who decided because, you know, he didn't get a favorable kind of redistricting map
district,
that he was going to move to Sully mm-hmm. Israel's district and run for that. So.
Interesting yeah. shakeup there. The next two are people that are leaving because they're running for the Senate.
Right.
Starting with House District 61, currently represented by State Representative Phil King. He announced he's going to be running for that new Senate District 10.
That's right. So Phil King, of course, a Republican, longtime Republican out of, I guess, Weatherford.
Mm-hmm. Parker County.
Parker County, out that way. So Senate District 10, as a part of the redistricting outcome, if you will, was definitely drawn to heavily favor a Republican in the race. And so Phil King decided it was the opportunity mm-hmm. to run for that. Of course, there are other candidates.
Need the microphone, yeah.
There are other candidates in that race as well, but apologies. But anyway, so yeah, he joins the other candidate in that race. And of course, that's Beverly Powell's seat, uh-huh. Democrat there out of, I think, Burleson.
So. Yes, yeah, used to be a district that was part of Tarrant County, was kind of a swing district. Now mm-hmm. it's been drawn in a way that brings in a number of other counties, certainly a more conservative district now. And also you've got Tan Parker, somebody who's been a state representative, who's announced that he's running for the Senate seat that was previously held by Jane Nelson.
That's right. So Jane Nelson announced, I guess, back in the summer before these special sessions that she was not running again. She's been there since, I guess, the mid-90s, I believe. Mm-hmm. But she's been in the Senate for a long time. She's, of course, the Senate Finance Chairman, very powerful position there. She's from Flower Mound, so is Tan Parker. Tan Parker, of course, is the former House Republican Caucus mm-hmm. Chairman. And, you know, he is someone who I think it's worth noting here, I'm not going to necessarily say is on the outs, but you might remember he was the 13th name, I think it was, that was targeted, right, in Bonin's kind of famous list,
right.
if you will. And he wasn't really given anything by Speaker Phelan this session, so there's not a lot to lose necessarily.
Right.
By doing
also
that.
former House GOP caucus chairman
right.
as well. The next one's kind of a fun one. We've talked about her a while. Good grief, the trip that she's had on this is State Representative Michelle Beckley. Okay, this is a Democrat who's been in there now for two terms,
right.
who had an interesting path to retirement this session.
She, when she was first elected two cycles ago, she beat incumbent Republican Representative Ron Simmons there. She flipped the seat to blue, if you will. She's had a very kind of tumultuous time there in the House. She mm-hmm. was one of the lawmakers who, of course, broke quorum with the majority of Democrat lawmakers, both in the regular session and going into special sessions, while in Washington, D.C., decided to run for that seat. During the redistricting process, both her House seat and the congressional seat she was running for, she was challenging Beth Van Dyne at the time, were written in such a way that they did not favor her. They basically mm-hmm. cut her out. And so she suspended her campaign a few weeks ago for Congress, and it's unclear whether she has any aspirations for anything else.
Yeah, lost the House district, lost right. the congressional district. So unfortunately, I suppose for some people, right, she won't
sure.
be back. Scott Sanford from Collin County, House District 70, somebody who's been there for a little while, mm-hmm. Announced, he was one of the early people, I think, who announced that he would not be coming back.
That's right. Scott Sanford's been there since, I guess, 2010, 2012, mm-hmm. that time frame, from McKinney, I guess. And he, you know, he did pick up his first primary challengers ever.
Yeah.
But notably, he, of course, said he will not be running for re-election. Also, House District 70 was one of the districts there in Collin County that, because Sanford announced he was leaving, was kind of moved almost completely, still in Collin County, but moved southwest to be more favorable, I think, a little bit more blue.
So. Yeah, a little bit more blue. Mm-hmm. Kyle Biederman, House right. District 73, another one where it looked like potentially he might have had a couple of different options to stay in the legislature. Mm-hmm. The district he was in was split up, was completely redrawn. And, you know, there's a little bit of a question whether or not he was going to run for that district, run for another one. And ultimately he said, you know, I'm going to bow out. I'm not going to be returning.
That's right. He announced this, I guess, last week. He represents House District 73. Mm-hmm. He is from Fredericksburg. When the redistricting process was happening, very briefly, the district was kind of split. And so he had originally announced that, hey, I also have a home, right, in Comal County, which mm-hmm. is still in 73. But there were additional people that announced. So the new House District 19 was where Representative Biederman now lived. And there were already some people announced there. There was already someone announced in the new 73. And so he decided mm-hmm. that it was best to kind of leave on a high and not run for reelection.
John Frullo, this is one we got yesterday. House right. District 84 up in Lubbock. Somebody who is not a conservative, really, from pretty early on, he cemented sure. himself on the liberal wing of the Republicans there. Announced he's not going to be coming back.
That's right. He announced. Now his district did expand a little bit. So you might recall, for those that are from West Texas, 84, House District 84, which Frullo represents, was kind of surrounded by Representative Burroughs' district, House mm-hmm. District 83, solely in Lubbock. During the redistricting process, those boundaries changed. It's still in Lubbock, but it expanded a little bit more. It's no longer necessarily surrounded by or wholly surrounded by Burroughs' district mm-hmm. 83. But, you know, he's been there for a long time, and it looked like he decided to kind of hang it up. So
right. House District 93, Matt Krause. This is somebody who is leaving because they're running for a higher office.
That's right. He announced a few weeks ago that he is running. He's an additional challenger, if you will, to current Attorney General Ken Paxton. He joins, you know, Land Commissioner George P. Bush, former Supreme Court of Texas Justice mm-hmm. Eva Guzman, in challenging Ken Paxton.
John Turner up in Dallas, House District 114, someone who had been there just for two sessions, announced that he'd be hanging it up. He announced pretty early on, too.
That's right. He announced right at the end of the kind of regular session that he wasn't going to seek mm-hmm. reelection. Most assumptions seem to be that he knew the redistricting writing was kind of on the wall uh-huh. For him, and that, you know, just his new district would have him challenging a fellow Democrat. And
right.
so it looks like he decided to leave.
House District 122 in San Antonio. Represented currently by Lyle Larson. Yeah. Lyle announced that he's going to be leaving the Texas House. And, you know, Lyle Larson was one of the most liberal Republicans mm-hmm. in the chamber, especially this last session. I mean, Governor Greg Abbott even called him liberal Lyle Larson yeah. and then endorsed him the next year.
But, that's right.
I think the writing was on the wall as far as his retirement when you look at some of his votes this session.
That's right. Absolutely. I mean, not to mention how vocal he was on social media and what have you this year, just critiquing current House leadership, critiquing the Republican Party mm-hmm. In the state, you know, kind of flirting with a potential third party run and what have you. And so, yeah, he announced that he was leaving to no one's surprise, really, mm-hmm. To be honest. He's very, you know, critical of Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, for instance, and so he will be hanging up. That's that northwest section mm-hmm. of the San Antonio area. And there's already several candidates that have announced to replace him.
Last two House retirements here we've got are Dan Huberty, first of all. Mm-hmm. Dan Huberty being somebody who was the chair, not this session, but had previously been the chair of public education.
That's right.
Somebody who had been an obstacle on a lot of education-related issues.
Sure.
And somebody who had his own personal issues earlier this year.
That's right. Dan Huberty was the guy that's like next to Lyle Larson, was probably the second, third most liberal member there in the House from the Houston area, the Humble area, I guess. Specifically was someone who stood in the way of all school choice efforts in the House for the last few cycles. Certainly, and he's also, of course, I think it was back in April, had a run-in with a potential DWI incident. You know, went and sought help, came back a few days later, finished out the term. And of course, someone who was recorded, right? I think
yeah.
it was back in 2015, famously recorded, where he was obviously inebriated coming off the House floor. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, that's someone hanging it up.
And lastly, in the House, you have, this is a big one, Jim Murphy. Okay, yeah. Jim Murphy. Also from Houston area, was the chair of the House Republican Caucus, mm-hmm. and yet you wrote in a piece, I guess, a few months back yeah. at this point, just kind of looking at his record and how he was very, very often on the opposing side and was actually fighting Republicans
sure.
in the Texas House, while at the same time trying to lead the caucus.
There were several times, and I document that in the article that you mentioned, several times during the regular session that he was on the opposite side of the majority of his own party or his colleagues there in the House, his own, the Republican Party, Texas legislative priorities, what have you. He's been around there for a long time as well. Someone who's been involved in his own kind of controversy on, like, what is a lobbyist? Is he a lobbyist, mm-hmm. right, who's also an elected official? Yeah, he'll be hanging it up as well. He's also someone who was the former higher education, or I guess a higher education chairman this go around, and certainly likes to throw money at colleges.
So. Well, he'll be gone. Now, those are the 16 in the House. We've got four, at least so far, in the Senate. One, you've already mentioned, Jane Nelson, right. Senate District 12 up there in North Texas, announced, longtime finance chair, she's not going to be returning. Tan Parker, the representative, trying to take that seat back. You've also gotten Senate District 24, Don Buckingham. Don Buckingham has only been there for, I'm putting myself on the spot here, maybe 6 years?
Yeah, I think that's
so.
Right.
From Lakeway, kind of outside of Austin in the Hill Country. She's somebody who announced that she wants to seek a higher office.
That's right. She announced, I guess, also back in June that she was running for land commissioner since George P. is running for Texas Attorney General spot. And she's joined there. There's a few other candidates in that race. But notably, she was endorsed by President Donald Trump, last week or the week before as well in that race. And then her district was one of the districts in the Senate redistricting process that kind of significantly changed as well. So.
Two more. We've got one from yesterday, which was Senator Eddie Lucio Jr., a Democrat from the Rio Grande Valley, but somebody who actually was a ally to Republicans on pro-life issues, as well as a couple of other issues, certainly was the most conservative Democrat in the state Senate.
That's right. Last primary election cycle, he got targeted by his own party, right? Mm-hmm. They were running someone against him specifically on the issue of life issues and what have you. He was certainly a pro-life Democrat in a way that Dan Patrick, mm-hmm. or Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, could kind of rely on him for a lot of those things. And there were a few other things, too, where like he would kind of bridge the gap between parties in the Senate in a way that the other Senate Democrats wouldn't. And so he's been there for over 30 years, I suppose.
Excellent. And the last one that I want to mention here is the fourth retirement that has a little bit of an interesting backstory, and that is Kel Seliger, right. Senate District 31 up in the Panhandle, West Texas, kind of stretches down there. And, Seliger was the most liberal Republican that we had in the Senate, somebody who had been a real obstacle on conservative issues like taxpayer-funded lobbying, like property tax reform, somebody who had been a thorn in the side of Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. And he even got a pretty high-profile endorsement against him as well.
That's right. During the third call, the recently concluded special session, you had President Trump come out and endorse against Kel Seliger and endorse one of his already announced challengers in Kevin Sparks. And then Seliger himself was the kind of victim, if you will, of a not-so-favorable or not-as-favorable district or redistricting map, if you will, to where they kind of wrote in certain portions into the new Senate District 31 that made it a little bit more competitive than that maybe it's been in last primary election.
Interesting. Well, just with the last minute here, I want to ask you, we've got all these retirements, we've run down them, we're expecting there to potentially be a few more. The question is, what kind of opportunity does this give conservatives going into the election?
I think any election cycle, there's always opportunity. I think certainly going into this one, there's more of one in that it's a redistricting cycle. So this will be the first cycle in which there's actually new boundaries for the next decade. Mm-hmm. Those new boundaries sometimes bode well for the incumbent. Sometimes they don't, right? It's new voters to that person. So if conservatives are attempting, if they're disgruntled with their lawmaker for whatever reason, there's probably not going to be a better time to do that, at least in the near future, to challenge that incumbent, if you will, than now for multiple reasons, but certainly because of the redistricting process and what have you. We're at 20 total. I expect we'll probably see a few more. And, new blood is always new blood is good, right? And that, it's you kind of get this new perspective and outlook on life, and they don't fall victim to some of the leadership woes in both the House and Senate.
All right. Well, it's going to be an interesting campaign season. We're going to be following it. Thank you so much for the update on all those, Jeremy. I want to thank everybody for watching here. First, I want to get through a few announcements and let you know. I've mentioned it, been mentioning it, but I got to mention it again, okay? If you haven't got your tickets yet for the Conservative Leader Awards. Those are happening on December 4th in Irving. It's a great time where we get to not just honor the activists, right, that make things happen, that are making a difference, but it's also a great time to meet so many of y'all. We know we expect hundreds of folks out there, but the ticket sales do end on November 24th, okay? That's the day before Thanksgiving, okay? So do yourself a favor. You'll be very thankful that you got them before Thanksgiving. Go ahead and get those tickets, and we've got the link down there in the comments if you're watching this right now. I also want to mention that we've got the application still open for the Texas Scorecard Fellowship, not only just for the spring, but also for summer and fall of 2022. If you know someone between the ages of 18 to 25 who would love to spend some time with us here and get paid while doing it, please check that out. Again, we're going to have that link down in the comments. I want to thank everybody for watching. We've got Steph, who is quarantining in Deer Park. Steph, hope everything is okay. You get to feeling better. Sharon, watching from Fort Worth. Ronald from Belleville. Angelo, watching from Amarillo. And Joyce from Belton. I'll actually be in Amarillo next Tuesday at the True Texas Project, so maybe you'll be out there. Maybe I'll get to see you. I'll also be, while I mention that, on Monday, I'll be in Kerrville at the Kerr County Patriots that are meeting at the Dieter Center at 6 o'clock in Kerrville. So if you're in that area, please be sure to check that out. And we've got True Texas Project at 6:30 on Tuesday in Amarillo. Love getting the chance to see y'all out and about there. Well, again, thank you so much for watching us. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to drop them down in the comments. But for right now, have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week. So check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.